host and have some prime time together with Rabbi Schechter, one of the great teachers of Torah of our generation. And I assume in America it's not that easy to have prime time and to spend some personal time with Rabbi Schechter, so make the most of it and take advantage of every minute. And it is a unique privilege to hear Torah from father and son. And that's a very special phenomenon and very special privilege. And Rav Shai, Baruch Hashem, following in his father's footsteps and growing to be a teacher of Torah in America. So for me, it is very special to be here this morning together with you. As a friend of the Shechters for many, many years, and as a friend of the community, and as Rav Shai introduced me, a friend of Klal Yisrael, I hope so. I hope I am fitting for that title. It is always a privilege to be Marvitz Torah, and especially for a wonderful group that came to Eretz Yisrael for the sole purpose, not to tour the land, which is great into itself, to see Eretz Yisrael, this beloved land that Kodesh Baruch Hu promised our forefathers, but just to be engaged in Torah in Eretz Yisrael is even a greater privilege. So my brothers, to all of you, make the most of it, and you should all go home besimcha, and with Seiris Toivis, and with many wonderful experiences of this visit in Eretz Yisrael. And ultimately, you should all make it back to Eretz Yisrael Bekorah. So the topic we will be discussing is dilemmas in mental health. And this is a very, very complicated issue. It is complicated when it comes to Halacha Lemaisa, because many years ago, we didn't know much about medicine in general, but we still knew far more about physical illnesses and ailments than we did about mental issues. And it is very clear in the Poskim, going back 500 years, 1,000 years, 2,000 years, that their knowledge of mental problems and mental ailments was very limited. So how do we define mental illness? Would it fit into the category of Chodesh Yesh B'Sekona, of Chodesh Ein B'Sekona? Do we override and violate Shabbos Yom Kippur for mental illnesses? The two most relevant sources that we have in Shulchan Aruch dealing with Chole B'Chlal, with the ill, with the sick, are Siman Shin Chof Ches, Shulchan Aruch Rechaim, dealing with violating Shabbos to care for patients, and on the other hand, of a Shut Ches, dealing with eating or drinking on Yom Kippur. Those are the two most relevant sources. So how do we deal not with people suffering from physical illnesses, but rather from mental illness? Three sources in Gemara and Shulchan Aruch. Shabbos Chof Tesum in Beis. The Mishnah teaches us, Mechaben Esanero, I will need you to help me out with my English. Don't speak English very well, as you obviously see. So, mechaben esaner b'shvil ruach ra. How does one say ruach ra in English? Bad spirit, something like that. So what is ruach ra? The Mishnah says we could put out the light for a person that is either ill or was attacked or obsessed by a ruach ra. So putting out an air, extinguishing the fire, is an issur d'rabbanan. And the Mishnah says, potu. The Mishnah doesn't say mutar. He bears no responsibility. He is not punishable. But the Gemara doesn't say that it is permissible. But the Gemara does make it clear that it's not only potter, it is mutar. It is permissible to put out the light when it is the need of a patient or someone that was possessed by a ruach ra. So Rashi on the spot says, he has a ruach ra. When he doesn't see, he is more calm, more comforted. What doesn't he see? He doesn't see that evil spirit, that bad spirit that possesses him. So obviously we're dealing with some type of a psychosis. because we know nothing about evil spirits that possess people. And when they're dark, they feel better, because in the dark he doesn't see that that possesses it. So that is Rashi's interpretation of Habim Sanar Mishum Ruafro. The Rambam, in his interpretation, Perusha Mishnah Rambam, the Rambam says that in Arabic, the Ruafro is called melancholia. I could only guess that it is from the same root of melancholy, which is a form of depression. So the Rambam interprets Ruafro as a depression, and the Rambam explains that people that suffer from Ruach Ra sometimes feel better when they're solitary, when they're with themselves, not with other people, and therefore he will feel better if he put out the light and he will be entirely to himself. So it is obvious, according to both interpretations, whether it's Rashi or it's the Rambam, that we're dealing with some form of mental illness. And the Mishnah makes it clear, and that is also in Shulchan Aruch Or HaChaim and Simchat Reish Peches, that we're dealing with some form of mental illness. And it is mutar to put out the light, put on the light. Even a Aruch HaDivayis would be permissible. So obviously, these illnesses, mental illness, would be defined as Cholesh Yesh Bo Sakot. So again, I'm retorting Masechet Tanis of Chof Beis. In Tanis Chofes, we're neither dealing with Hilcha Shabbos nor with Dine Yom Kippur. What are we dealing with? What are the circumstances in which we are Mis'ana U'meiria? What justifies decreeing a fast day and bringing together communities, communities of Israel, for a prayer for Tkiyas Shofar? What is an emergency situation? And the Gemara makes it clear. It is either when the entire community is in danger, either an epidemic or a famine, or even if individuals are in a life-threatening situation. Even if it is not the public, it is individual. But only if individual lives are in mortal danger, are in direct jeopardy. And one of the situations which justify decreeing a fast, l'is'anris u'lahariya, is Ruach Ro. So once again we find that Ruach Ro is considered a sakona. Rashi, Tanis Chofes, says, what is the sakona of Ruach Ro? When he is possessed by a bad spirit or an evil spirit, he might drown, he might fall out of a window or off a cliff. So, once again, Rashi makes it obvious. Those that suffer from a Ruach Ra are in danger. Does Rashi mean suicidal tendencies? Or merely he is not in control of himself, but unintentionally he might put his life in jeopardy. But nevertheless, once again we find mental illness is defined as a Cholesh Yesh B'Sakona. And the third source is the Sefer Shulchan Aruch Tov Kuf Ayin Aleph Siv Gimel, when the Shulchan Aruch says, there are people that are not allowed to fast, and one of them is me, sheyesh lo ruach ra. Tov Kuf Ayin Aleph doesn't deal with a fast day that is biblical, that is min haTorah. It is a fast day that is midrabanan. But nevertheless, what we see in this halacha is, one that is possessed by a Ruach Ra cannot fast, and he is defined as a Torah. Chuvas HaRashba, Miuchosois Semen Reish Pei Alaf. I'm not sure that all of you are familiar with Chuvas HaMiuchosois HaRashba, but after this year, you can check it out and become more familiar with these sources. I won't tell you where to check it out, probably know better than I do. But in Chuvas HaMiuchosois, Simen Reish, Pei Aleph, 281, the Rashba deals with a person that made a shavua. He swore, Roy Lesachek Imois. What would that mean? Roy Lesachek Imois. Modern language, not to gamble. And then he is terribly depressed and he has some mental condition. And once he gambled and it made him feel better. Is he entitled to violate his shavua. So this is the Uraisa. If a person makes a shavua, he is expected to fulfill what he took upon himself. But the Rashba says, in this case, if he feels better, that would be defined as a pikuach nefesh situation, and therefore he is entitled to do whatever it takes to make him feel better and to get out of that deep abyss of depression. However, the Rashba bases this psak on different sugya. Shabbos Kuf Chav Ches, the sugya of Yesuve Dait. In that sugya we learn, dealing with a woman that's in labor before delivering a baby, and whatever she needs, even though it's subjective, totally subjective, the doctors say, there is no need, but if she feels this is something she needs, we do it. Just to have her in the comfort zone and calm and cooperative would be defined as pikuach nefesh, and the Rashba bases his ruling regarding violating the shvuah on that sugya, not on the sugyas that I mentioned before, but on the sugya of Yesuva Dait. So dealing with the Ruach Ra, we brought a few sources, three different sources that is defined as a Chodesh Yesh B'Sekola. So how would we understand the Sifin Shulchan Aruch Shin Chof Ches Sif Lamed Hei Asur V'Hatiz Chalav Al Tinok Shesovel Meruach Ra, because it's a Chodesh She'ein Bo Sekola. So in this Sif in Shulchan Aruch, in this paragraph, we're dealing with a baby that suffers from a Ruach Ra. And there seems to be a zgula if the mother would have some milk on the baby's mouth, on the baby's face, that would take care of the Ruach Ra. And the halacha is, no, we can't do that. It is not the milk that the baby will drink. It's just a zgula. It's not nursing in the classical sense. That would not be permissible because the Ruach Ra is not a sakona. So is it a sakona or is it not a sakona? I'm not a brisker. But obviously, shnei dinim b'Ruach Ra. Ve'en adamis. There are different forms, different levels of bad spirits. Because I don't know exactly what a bad spirit is in the first place, I don't know the first definition, so I have no problem saying there obviously are different forms and different types of Ruach Ra. So in this halacha we're dealing with something that is not defined as sakana. In the previous sources, it is yesh b'sakana. And maybe the difference would be a very simple one. When we're dealing with a baby won't jump out of the window. He won't go to the lake. He won't drown. He won't fall. So, by any objective test, it's not a Chodesh Yesh B'Sekona. But in reality, in a subjective reality, it would be defined as a Chodesh Yesh B'Sekona, and therefore, it would be permissible even to violate the Malacha D'Oraisa on Shabbos. Going to later Poskim, after I dealt with the most basic sources, in Gemara and Shulchan Aruch, Mogen Avraham, Tavkuf Nun Dalet Sif Ches, Tavkuf Nun Dalet Es Dinei Tishavav. So the Mogen Avraham says, Chosar Deya Shenesrapa. Chosar Deya is a person that is mentally impaired, mentally ill, and he was cured. He still should eat on Tishavav because he still would be defined as pikuach nefesh. And the same rule would apply to Yom Kippur as well. Shas HaTshuvas Pri Oretz, one of the great Turkish poskim, going back a few hundred years, Chele Gimelsim and Beis, dealing deals with a person shenitra for all of that, right? Different words, different definitions, but boils down to basically the same conditions, mental illness. And a doctor said that the way to cure him is to take a chicken and kill it. Not shchita, not proper shchita. Kill a chicken, boil the water, and that is his cure. And the Priorit quotes that the Basin of Saloniki, Tiruf Hadas is defined as Sakona, and the Ruach Nefesh would override the Issur D'oraisa of Nirvana. What we see in all these early sources, that starting from the Mishnah and the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch to later Poskim, we did define mental illness as Chodesh Yesh B'Sakona. But as I made clear at the outset of this discussion of this shiur, all these sources deal with mental illness as if they're all the same. Chosar Deya, Nitrefa Olav Datoy, Ruach Ra. Any situation of mental illness would be defined as a Chodesh Yesh B'Sakona and would justify Chilul Shabbos, Macholas Asurais, Yirin Neveilis. We would expect present-day Gedolim to be more definitive and more distinctive. So in Igros Moshe we find the Tshuva, Eben Ezra, Chelek Alef, Samachay, dealing with a woman taking contraceptives to prevent pregnancy, and it deals with a woman that had some issues after giving birth. Once and twice. So the Moshe argues it's a chazaka that we have to take into account. And he is lenient regarding methods that are halachically problematic based on the assumption that depression would be defined as a sakon. Shevet Alevi, Chelek Dalet Siman Adal, we find a similar tshuva. But neither of Moshe nor Rav Ozma actually deal what exactly is the situation, what is the condition, how do doctors define or psychiatrists define the level of sakana. So trying to be more practical with all we know in our present time about mental illness, generally we could define the mental conditions and mental illness in two basic categories, which is psychosis and neurosis. And they're different. The symptoms are different. The condition is a different one. People that are psychotic usually live in some enclosure, in a world to themselves, detached from reality. And that would include schizophrenia and many other different conditions, related conditions. These conditions basically would be clearly defined as a Chodesh Yesh B'Sakona. And these people could be dangerous to themselves and to others as well. Some of them hear voices. Some of them feel that they receive commands directly from Kodesh Baruch, from someone up there, from someone down here. And psychotic people could be dangerous to themselves, to their surroundings, to even to close family members. They're not bad, but it is an extremely dangerous situation. And therefore, yes, treating people that have psychotic conditions usually would be defined as pikuach nefesh. Neurosis is a different family. It's a different category. And the basic symptoms of neurosis is either elation or depression or both. Combination of both, which we define as bipolar illness, in which sometimes there are extreme fluctuations from top to bottom and from some hysterical elation to deep depression. And many times these people as well could be dangerous to themselves more than to others, and sometimes they would develop suicidal tendencies. So in dealing with mental illness, there is such a wide and broad spectrum. I think we always need to consult the professionals, the psychiatrists that are taking care of these people, to evaluate the level of sakana. But the most basic and important rule in pikuach nefesh is safek, and sveka of pikuach nefesh would justify Chilul Shabbos, Achila B'Yom Kippur, or anything else that is involved. One of the conditions that is far more common today than it was in days of yore many years ago. Maybe we weren't aware of this condition once upon a time. So sometimes we are baffled by what happens in the modern world, especially in the area of mental treatment of mental illness. And we don't understand why anorexia, for instance, is far more common today than it was in the past. Maybe it has something to do with social norms and social trends, but anorexia is a condition which is far more common today than it was years ago. We could assume that there wasn't as much awareness years ago as there is today. So maybe men and more girls than boys that suffer from anorexia, maybe once upon a time they were called Michelina. You know, that was the general name, general diagnosis. So today that we know, Michelina is not simply Michelina. It comes in many forms and shapes and many different categories and many serious problems that could be dealt with and could be treated. So we don't know. Maybe there was less awareness, but it seems to be clear that there is far more anorexia today than there was in the past. But it is not that relevant why we need to deal with the question of what we do. So many times in the past, I pastored that girls suffering from anorexia could eat normally on Yom Kippur, not Lishim. Because even though there is no direct sakana, that's a terrible ailment. And people and girls die from anorexia. To my dismay, I personally know a few families that lost children to this terrible malady. And the way to treat them is a difficult, and it's a long haul, and it takes time until we design a plan of eating. And any interference, any interruption with that pattern could set the patient back months or years and ultimately could endanger the patient's life. So it does seem to be a chiddush to many, and some of them didn't really agree with my psak, but my psak was that girls suffering from anorexia, Yom Kippur, should eat in the normal pattern that was worked out in the personal tailored plan for them, and they should not try to eat the shiguri. So we discussed some relevant questions in the broad area of mental issues, and what we see from the many sources that I wrote is generally developed and poiskim throughout the ages. Associated mental illness with pikuach nefesh, and basically related to these maladies, to these ailments, as cholesh yesh v'sakar. Trying to apply these age-old rulings to modern science and what we know today about mental conditions is our challenge. And as I pointed out, the two basic categories of mental conditions are psychosis and neurosis. And I think Rashi and the Rambam, going back to the first source I quoted in today's shiur, Ruach ra, Shabbos da chof tesum et beiz, machaven esamer, mishul ruach ra. We put out the lights, we extinguish the candles for a person that is obsessed by a ruach ra. I think, according to Rashi, we're dealing with psychosis, and according to the Rambam, we're dealing with neurosis. Because Rashi says, when it's dark, he doesn't see that evil spirit, and therefore he feels better. And we wonder, when it's light, what does he see? So obviously, in the dark, he doesn't see. What does he see? In the light, he sees something that no one else sees. He sees that evil spirit interfering and meddling in his personal life. That clearly is a psychotic situation in which people imagine, and they live in some imaginary world to themselves. So according to Rashi's interpretation of Ruach Ra and Shabbos Daf Chof Tes, we're dealing with some form of psychosis. The Rambam says, melancholia, obvious in depression. And the Rambam says that these people are more at ease and at comfort, and they're calmer when they're alone. with themselves, and therefore they benefit from darkness. So obviously, according to that, I'm dealing with some bad form of depression, which is a neurotic disease and not a psychotic one. So what we learn from the Rambam and from Rashi, whether it's psychosis or it's neurosis, it could be life-threatening and it would justify kill shots. So once again, I just gave a brief overview, starting off with the most basic sources in Halacha, up to rulings from the Gedolim of our time, and some more detail based on what we know today about mental illness, and they also relate it to some specific shots. Shas Shuvas Minchas Osher, Chelik Beis, and Chelik Aleph, there are a few Shuvas dealing with OCD, which is also a very, very common problem. Yes, that's Chelik Beis, and there's one of the Shuvas in that Chelik, but there's some others in Chelik Aleph. And OCD affects us more than it affects others. So, some problems are especially relevant to the Frum community. OCD is one of them. It's not that we invented or discovered OCD. It's more that OCD discovered us. It is not unique to our community. It's not exclusive. But various surveys prove that the Frum community is more prone to OCD than others, and it could be understood. Everybody knows what OCD is, obsessive compulsory disorder. So when people are frum and they have emes d'shmaya and fear of a kodesh baruch hu, and we have a very clear set of rules, what is permissible and what is prohibited, what you could and what you can't, and the coulds and can'ts dictate every moment of your life, then you are more prone to suffer from OCD. And it is very common in our community. And sometimes it's very painful. So, in the first volume of Shas HaTshuvos Minchas Osher, I published a printed tshuva dealing with a person who's a great Talmid Chacham and a very special person, but he can't really have him because whenever he says Shem Shemayim, he is in terrible pressure and he can't really pronounce Shem Shemayim as one should, and he is in torment, he and his family. And I ask him, you should never say the shame twice. As it comes out, and you just move on and finish davening. And I ask him, you are not allowed to even try to get it right. And then the person came back to me and asked, but I would like to know, okay, I do as the Rav Paskin, but am I Yotze or I'm not Yotze? I would like to know. I will do as the Rabbi Paskin, but I would like to know, am I Yotze or not? And I gave a very novel psak. I know it's a big chiddush, but I stand behind that chiddush. And I ask him, not only for his comfort, I think it's la'amito shelter. You did your best with the tools that Kodesh Baruch Hu bestowed upon, and therefore you were yoitza, the mitzvah of Tevel. But I really didn't pronounce the Shem as I should, and I say, nevertheless, you were yoitza. And why? And what is this psalm based? So let me share with you an argument, an idea. I have no sources. Let's say I have no sources, only Savor Saleh. I am thoroughly convinced. I actually do have some sources, but that you'll have to check my Jewish to find. But let me share with you my argument. I think there are two mitzvahs, and only two mitzvahs. If a person performs to the best of his ability, using the tools that Kodesh Baruch Hu gave him, even though he wasn't Mekayim the mitzvah, al proteo v'digdukeo, he did not perform the mitzvah with its basic details, he still was Yotze. What are those two mitzvahs? And why are they different than all the others? The mitzvah of tefillah and the mitzvah of tshuva. What is unique about these two mitzvahs and what would set them in a separate category? I say this. All the other mitzvahs If you're Mekayim the Mitzvah, you get reward. If you don't Mekayim the Mitzvah, you're losing reward. Okay, that's fair. Nobody could be Mekayim all the Mitzvahs. Some Mitzvahs are relevant only to Kohanim, others to Levim. Some are Naeg only Bisman Shabbos HaMikdash Kayim. Others are relevant always. Some are only Netzesot. Others are in Chutz La'aretz. Nobody actually can perform all the mitzvahs. So, you still have enough mitzvahs to perform to be zayecha to thousands and thousands and hundreds of habit. But there are only two mitzvahs. Their performance is not only to achieve reward. Tefillah is answered. Chazal say, tefillah is rachamim. It is the means in which a person could be zayecha to rachamim shamayim. Tshuva is not only about getting the reward of a mitzvah. Tshuva atones. Tshuva is the means in which, it is the only means in which we could be zayecha to mechilas licha lekapora. Would it be reasonable to assume that some Jews don't have the means to be zayecha to kapora salvei? Is that possible? So the Rambam says vidui is ma'atev in tshuva. If you didn't say vidui, your tshuva means nothing. So what if a person is mute and he can't say vidui? He has no voice. He had a tumor on his vocal cords and they needed to be taken out. So he can't do tshuva, according to the Rambam. If you don't say vidui, your tshuva is meaningless. And the Rambam writes clearly in the first halacha of Hilchos Tshuva. If someone didn't say vidui with his mouth, he didn't verbalize, he didn't vocalize his tshuva, then his tshuva is meaningless and he does not have kapora. So is it reasonable that some people just cannot have kapora? No, I think that's totally unacceptable, impossible. It is impossible that one Jew could do tshuva and another cannot. And I have the same argument regarding tefillah. Because tefillah is not only a mitzvah to be rewarded. If you can't do this mitzvah, you do that mitzvah. A person that doesn't have an arm doesn't have the mitzvah of tefillah. So, he has tefillah shalosh, he has other mitzvahs. But tefillah is the means to bring upon ourselves rachamei shamayim. So is it reasonable that some people will not be zayecha to rachamim because they don't have vocal cords? They cannot verbalize. Or the person that has OCD and he cannot say properly the Shema. Therefore, regarding these two mitzvahs, I say, they are ma'akev for those that have the ability. But a person that does his utmost with what a Kodesh Bohu gave him, not only is Pupper from doing more, he was Mekayim the Mitzvah. And his tefillah is considered a proper tefillah, and his tshuva is considered a proper tshuva. And therefore, my exact to our friend with OCD was, be totally comfortable with my exact. It is not only a b'dieved, because this is the way to your salvation and to your cure. If you do your best, you tried once, you were Mekayim Mitzvah's tefillah, and your tefillahs will be heard, b'shamayim. So, we discussed some kedushin and some interesting concepts and ideas regarding the broad sugya of mental health issues in halacha. So, any questions? Yes?
With regard to the disease of not eating,
anorexia.
Anorexia. You said earlier that when someone is has a mental illness, even if they're better, that they still have a din of pikuach nefesh.
Yes.
Is that true of anorexics?
Yeah, we did bring sources that even if when they're better, they still have a din of pikuach nefesh, but that naturally depends on the professional assessment. You know, a person that had cancer many years ago, and he's cured, and he's okay, and he's clean, or he had open heart surgery, he would not forever be defined as a Chodesh Yesh B'Sechon. Same applies to mental illness. As long as he is still in a precarious situation, and the professionals think that... So the same would be regarding anorexia. It takes time till this illness is totally cured, but sometimes it is cured. So, pikuach nefesh depends on professional assessment. Yes?
Professional assessment, there are assessments and evaluation that can be done early in life, which will define what can be expected in the future. As a Jewish community, I think especially the more religious Jewish community, this has always been covered over, and there has been very little effort for many, many years to try to reach children when they're most receptive to help in later life. Now, is there anything that's being done in that respect? Because we were talking already, when it's full blown, can we get it before it blows up?
We didn't get the question.
You need to be more specific. You need to be more specific. You know, what came to my mind when you started presenting your question, we know today what to expect. Years fast forward. I think the most relevant example is what we know as the BRCA gene regarding breast cancer, which in some families is very prevalent, and we could be fairly accurate by assessing that when the woman will reach an age of 35 to 40, she will develop breast cancer. And one of the tormenting questions confronting the professional world and our communities as well is, should we do preventive measures? Surgery, removing the ovaries and the breasts to give the woman a better chance of reaching the ripe old age. And my psak in this question is not a chiyuv, but it definitely is permissible. And in a personal way, I have recommended to many families that discuss this issue with me that after a woman has children and has established a family, I would recommend taking preventive measures. But I understand that your question was more basic than dealing with children. I am not aware that we could know with a high degree of certainty what mental issues might come up in the future and what means we have at our disposal to prevent them.
There are assessments now for autism, for predicting it rather young, at young ages. There's certainly even genetic testing for schizophrenia and for some of the other mental diseases.
Whatever we could find and treat as early as possible would be recommended. I think most cases of schizophrenia or autism are found, or we are aware of them at a relatively young age. So I think knowledge is never detrimental. Whatever we could find as early as we can and do whatever we can to help out would, should be recommended.
But there's been a lot of stigma.
Stigma is something we live with and we have to try to deal with.
To take that question just one step further, if a child at an early age is manifesting symptoms of psychosis and neurosis, but is too young to really be in a state of harming himself, could you be Machal Shabbos to help that child?
Some shyness demand more specific knowledge. But if we could prevent Zekon in the future, that would be defined as Pikuach Nefesh. The Zekon doesn't have to be right here and now. But it depends whether we realistically could treat this situation before it's full-blown. But if we could, preventing Sekhon in the future would be defined as Pikuach Nefesh. I just want to make a general comment. When Rav Shai said that we could have questions and answers, they don't necessarily have to be limited to mental illness. The questions and answers could be about anything. Yes.
With regard to, I think that's part of the question that this woman asked, but also, I'm so impressed by the idea, response that you gave to that OCD patient in terms of tying it into the fact that Hashem gave us missions in life and competencies and skills with which to deal with those missions. And this is something that really there's such a stigma in the, I don't know if this is much here, but in America there certainly still is, that these things are, they're covered. And many of the schools, you know, consider even, they parents worry about what will happen to their children when they're in shidduchim if this comes to light.
First of all, anything that has to do with stigma, be confident that it's here far more than America. It all comes from here.
along with the medical advice, there needs to be education to parents and to schools, especially, that this is so detrimental to children and adults.
Yes, I think dealing with the question of stigma, I know it's here, but I think we have made great progress in this area. And I think a generation ago, we just ignored these kids. We pushed them under the rug. But the rug is reaching to the ceiling. No more room under the rug. So I think today there is more awareness and more openness than there was in the past. You know, social trends aren't changed in leaps and bounds. It's a process. But I think we, the film community, has made remarkable progress in the area of stigmas. And today we have institutions and we have schools. And I know in Beis Yankov here in Yerushalayim, there are quite a few disabled children with physical handicaps, mental issues, and they are embraced by their classmates. I think we have made a lot of progress. We still have a lot to improve. I think everybody has a lot to improve. But I think we have made progress, and we need to make far more progress in education of our children to embrace and to accept that. We have finally realized that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives these problems not only to the goyim, but to us as well. And he is fair when giving out illness. And yes, so I think we have made progress, but there is still a lot to improve. Yes?
Part of the challenge, the way I understand or know from mental illness, is that the people, because the individual who's afflicted often can't follow the psak or the recommendations of the doctor or the rav. A person who's physically ill wants to help themselves because of self-preservation, but very often the mentally ill person, you know, what you say, Shem Hashem, wants to go, they can't follow the psak because of the nature of the illness. They are not able to often help themselves. So how, I don't know if there's an answer to this, but how is that approached or dealt with?
First of all, today, we have made, the medical establishment has made great progress, and some of psychotic or neurotic patients, if they take their medication, they function quite normally. They are under control. And most of these people, we're not dealing with T people that are mentally retarded. We're dealing with people that might be highly intelligent. And when they take the medicine, they function quite well. So they are responsive to the psukim and to the rules that we give them. But yes, there are some people with mental issues that are not really in control of themselves. And then the psak is more relevant to the family members and those that try to take care of them to a greater or to a lesser degree of success. Yes. Does anybody have any shyness regarding healthy people?
In society, especially in the criminal justice system, we often find claims that a person is innocent by reason of mental illness. What are the halakha parameters for these claims?
I want to say something that might surprise some of you. But it is really my feeling. So in our circles, we are taught that the modern Western world is totally against Torah values, and everything they say is detrimental to everything we believe in. Not always is that correct, because we live in a basically just and decent society. Yes, I am totally aware of what's happening in our day and age, and some things that are considered by the modern world to be entirely acceptable and normal are really against the fundamentals of what we believe in and what we adhere to. But in other areas, especially in the area of medical treatment and the sanctity of life, I don't think that there is a big schism between us and them. Yes, end of life is an issue, but it's a more halachic issue of defining the barrier between the living and the dead. But the modern world cares for life and will do its utmost to sustain life and to give medical care to all those that need it. So, could you just remind me what the question was?
Legal parameters.
Oh, yes. So the legal parameters. Right, yes. So I think, and this issue as well, we must understand that Al Pi Torah, you cannot say, I had an uncontrollable urge to hurt someone, to kill someone, or even to, you know, to be an arayis. And an urge is something you need to control. But there is a din of oinus, and I think that even when the Sanhedrin was intact, I think the Sanhedrin would have professionals assess an individual whether he has reasonable control over what he does. So there is a concept of oinus, and there are sources in Shas in which we see even a psychiatric condition or a psychological condition would be defined as oinus. I'm just referring to a sigya which only the major Talmid HaChachamim in the crowd will understand, because I can't go in every question into great detail. But in Ksuvos Daf Nun Aleph, Tchilos Avrosim V'Soif HaBoinus. So it is totally a psychological case. We're dealing with a healthy person, and nevertheless, we would define a certain situation as oinus in those special circumstances. So what we learn from that situation is a person might be totally sound and healthy, but in a certain situation, he no longer has control over himself, and that would be defined as an oinus. And therefore, yes, in the modern world, before you send the guy to firing squad, no more firing squads around, but there are still some states in America in which they do deal with capital punishment, and the patient, not really a patient, but the criminal would be assessed by professionals, is he control of himself? I think that is halachically relevant, because we do find situations in which a certain state of mind might be defined as an oinus. But we are far harsher and not as lenient as the crazy modern world in which almost everybody could argue that, you know, I have these tendencies and therefore it would be legitimate. That's a very general response.
So these days, mild depressions are very common. It's like very popular. For someone with a mild depression, be considered to be a chodesh she'en bo sakana. Therefore, you can turn off lights, except for the Rambam, and you can turn on the air conditioner with grandma, because if you feel depressed, or is that going too far?
Yes, even a mild depression would be defined as chodesh she'en bo sakana, but I don't know where you got to that, we could do a Baruch Hashem Tzichur Gufa for a Chodesh Shem Sekona. No way.
Okay.
Well, for Chodesh Shem Sekona, it is only dealing with medicine. Or Amir al-Nachri, no other shivos. כמרוע ראשים חופכי סעיף יוזיין. מלוך השם שיח על הגוף החמור יותר מכל השבוסים. Nobody is lenient with a מלוך השם שיח על הגוף החמור השם וסכון. So, the details weren't accurate, but yes, every depression, even a mild depression, which is not defined as חולש יש בסכון, would be defined as a חולש אין בו סכון.
And even grama? We can't do grama
either? No, the big problem is, what is grama? And that is something I cannot discuss right now. That is one of the more complicated studies.
Just to switch a Dean Mullinus for a second.
Okay.
If I think Rabbi seems to also want to switch that up here. But if someone was to send on a work trip, let's say they sent the Eretz Yisrael to work for a week, and their company, puts them in a hotel or whatever, but they decide to stay with their children or their friends or whatever, are they allowed to give that Zechus to stay on top of somebody else, or if they didn't use it themselves, or they have to pass it up?
I think they should have the consent of their employer or the person organizing the trip to give that privilege to someone else. Yes?
We can ask off topic.
Yeah?
All right. Can I ask the Rav's opinion about organ donation?
Well, for many years, the Haredi community was attacked and bashed for not donating organs, as if we lack compassion to others. I am pleasantly shocked and so impressed and inspired by what is happening the past few years in Haredi Jewry and religious Jewry, people donating kidneys. And we are the first place in the entire world, and I say this with full authority, no community in the world where so many kidneys donated by living donors as in the past 5 years in the Haredi community. And I think that is the ultimate mesilus nefesh. I can think of nothing more inspiring than people donating kidneys, not to family members, but to people they don't even know. Hundreds of people in the Haredi community in the past few years donated kidneys to people they don't even know. And it is unprecedented in the entire world. And that proves, yes, we do not donate hearts because we adhere to Allah. And according to some of the greatest poskim of our generation, if you do not recognize brain death, and that is a topic we will not get into today, you cannot give a heart. But the people that donate hearts after their demise, at least the way they interpret their demise. People that donate kidneys are putting their life into a certain degree of jeopardy, and they expect to live a long life. So I am not inspired by any phenomenon as I am by this phenomenon. So I say it's a great mitzvah to donate organs if you do so in accordance to halacha. So, brain death is something we will not be discussing today. But I do want to make a comment. Even if I would accept brain death, being familiar with the modern medical establishment, I don't think we could rely on professionals to define what is brain death. Because, and once again, it doesn't come from a bad place. It comes from a good place. Because they want to save lives, and they want the best organs. But it is extreme pressure to define brain death in the most lenient way to be able to remove those organs as soon as possible before they become impaired. And therefore, 10 years ago, Harvard criteria was relevant. But today, Harvard criteria is history. It's prehistoric. And every team defines brain death in his own way. And therefore, I cannot agree to removing hearts based on brain death when every medical team and every medical facility is entitled and authorized to define brain death as he wishes. So this is an extremely painful situation. But if we could donate organs to save lives without violating any halachic principle, I think that is the greatest mitzvah, and it's happening big time.
If I may, as a follow-up, can we accept organs that have been harvested after brain death?
I think so. I see no halachic reason to say no. I just want to make a very general comment. Right here to my left, this Sitzelav Shechter, he's a major halachic authority. So he might have different opinions of anything I say, but he's such a Baal Midas, he would never say that. So each and every one of you that asks me a shaila is entitled to consult Rav Shechter, you know, after this shiur is over. And his opinion is just as valid as mine is, maybe more. Yes?
The advent and advancement of technology where it's shifting, especially with the Garbei Shabbos, things away from the Surei Doraita, maybe to be Surei Dorabanan, maybe not to be Surim at all, where the Ruach Halacha becomes so much more important than the actual halachic norms. How do we deal with that change or that shift in halacha where it becomes much more esoteric rather than the quantifiable halacha?
Two comments. I don't think you're familiar with Minchas Oshav Shabbos Shulchan.
Come over.
What?
I'll live across the street. I'll tell them to come over.
Shout.
Okay. Because in my opinion, nothing really has changed with the advance of technology. And my personal opinion is, any form of electricity, electronics, micro-electronics, still is a chashash d'oraisa. In my opinion, there's no difference between the old bulbs and the lead bulbs. Everything is a chashash d'oraisa, based on my personal opinion. So I don't really think that to describe present-day situation, no longer d'oraisa, no longer the d'rabbanan, it's only the spirit and the feeling of Shabbos. In my opinion, that is not correct. Using modern technology, any form of electricity or electronics, any electrical circuit, would be a chashash d'oraisa according to what I elaborated. Sima lamed lamed aleph lamed beis in the chashash first volume. I think sima lamed aleph second volume. Maybe I don't have the numbers right. However, even if we would assume that maybe it's no longer d'oraisa, I do think that the ruach of Shabbos is of extreme importance. I wrote a tshuva, but I'm not sure it was published or not, in which I made a philosophical, shared a philosophical dilemma. Sometimes we are confronted with a shaila, and we feel by pure halachic criteria there would be room for leniency. But we think that it is what we describe in our modern times as a slippery slope. And sometimes we're not even dealing with a slope of the cliffhanger. And some of them feel that we should try to find some halachic basis to Asa. And I think that the integrity of halacha and honesty is paramount. And I think I would prefer to say, in halachic criteria, there would be room for leniency. But we do have the authority, as Gedolei Yisroel, as guardians and keepers of this sacred trust, we do have authority to say, this is something that should be rejected. Even though by pure halachic criteria, maybe we could find room for leniency. I feel that trying to prove an Yisroel, which we don't believe in, is far more problematic. Because in our day and age, one of our big problems is the internet. One of our big problems is Google. So Reb Yaakov Emden Hines Siddur says that woman could be Yoyle L'Toyle. 100 years ago, till you got to Rav Yaakov in the Siddur, you went through Bavli and Yerushalmi and the Tur and the Rambam and the Chassar Sofer and the Noigim Yudin. By the time you got to Rav Yaakov, you knew that, you know, that is not a source you could rely on. But today, person never learned Gemara, never learned Shulchan Aruch. And Gogol gives them Rav Yaakov and say a woman could be out of the toilet. And that is tragic, and that is the big problem we are dealing with today, because data is available to all. So you're going to try to argue an Isser, and people will see, no, this Isser has no substance. And what it brings is people are skeptic about anything that they want to say. You know, if he made this argument, that was proven to be, you know, really not then. So I think the truth has to be narrow the way. That has to be the most relevant, the most powerful thing. Every psach we need to believe in. And therefore, I would prefer to say, well, maybe by pure halachic criteria, this would be permissible. But Yiddishkeit is not only based on halacha. Yiddishkeit is based on two pillars, on the halacha and on the nesoyah. So we do have the authority to say, well, girls are entitled to put on tefillin. Some great women in our history put on tefillin. It's not a nesor, but it is something that should be rejected, because I think our nesoyah and our minhagim are kodesh. They are holy. They are to be sanctified. So instead of trying to prove that it's an Isser, and we might be in a very unpleasant situation, when people find all the sources, and the Isser doesn't seem to stand, I would prefer to say, maybe by pure halachic definition, it could be permissible. But Yiddishkeit is not only about halacha. Minhag and the Messiah are as important as pure halachic definition, and we do have the authority to say, this is something that we do not accept, and this is something that we do reject. I hope I made myself clear.
Yes. What is the Rav Shita with regard to Tchelis in our time?
Minhag Sosha. Which Chelik? How would I forget? Chelik Beis. First five tshuvos deal with tchelis. I think that the Peshul Shechter is four tchelis, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's legitimate. I don't think we found tchelis. So I don't wear tchelis. Many people ask me, should they stop wearing tchelis? And I say no. I would be very distressed to hear that people stop wearing tchelis because of my tshuvos. No. There is no downside. However, my opinion is that this is not the real thing. It's not the real tchelis. But as I said, there are different opinions. Okay, it was a pleasure to be with you this morning, but my time is up. I wish you all of it. Make the most of it.